glad to have you on board tonight. Hour number two, we're going to spend the next hour with Erica and try and bring you up to speed on the latest. This situation is certainly morbid. It's awful. It's genocide. It's evil. People are dying horrible deaths all the time, and it's only going to progress and get worse. The new bivalent booster is coming out, allegedly designed for the EG.5 variant, otherwise known as ERIS, IRIS. And I did talk to a friend today, and he says he and his family got it, all of them. They said it was awful. So I don't want to scare anybody in any way, shape, or form, but it was identified as that somehow. It's a different country. It wasn't here. But it's out there. And if they want to turn up the panic, they'll just introduce it all over the place. All they got to do is get it into people, and people do the rest. It's called shedding. You know the game. Everybody is actually a walking bioreactor or a petri dish, and that synthetic virus will get in there, and it can mutate in the person, and aside from being spread. So, yeah, his whole family got it. So somebody got it, and it was passed to the rest. That's how it works. All right, let's see if my partner's there. You're sitting back, got your feet up?
No, not quite. I'm sitting at attention.
Sitting at attention. Very good. That ramrod spine of yours. I get the picture. Okay. Here we are back again, and we have a number of things on the schedule. Now, I think most of you have heard the rumors that the Bolshevik Communist Biden administration, the O-Biden administration, as in Obama, is going to bring back COVID restrictions. There was some talk about climate change restrictions, but they're going to use COVID, and that's probably why this IRIS has been turned loose. I'm just going to say that. I have no proof. I'm just speculating, but it's a reasonable speculation. A lot of these things are turned loose intentionally. It's so easy to do. It's silly. So, all right, the rumor was somewhere in mid-September, I think, they were going to begin masking TSA up again. Now, I was talking to Erica just a short while ago, and she happened to turn Fox on for a few minutes. That's her tolerance. And what did you see?
It was Hannity talking about the COVID restrictions, you know, going to be put in place in the next few weeks. It's almost like they're planning something. Like they know what's coming.
He's a player. He knows. So we have masks. We have 6 feet, which was made up by some kid, I think, somewhere along the line. If you've been following our recommendations, I know most of you probably haven't. I get it. It's okay. But our recommendations remain masks and gloves whenever you're out in any public setting. And masks, we understand, don't work perfectly. They're not good to wear for hours on end. You pop it on, you go into the market for 20 minutes, whatever, come out and you take it off. It's going to give you some measure of aerosolized droplet protection. And I'll take it. I don't care if it's 10%, 15, I'll take it. We need it. So what other restrictions would we expect to see?
Oh, I don't know. They're saying TSA is going to be masking up, and it follows to reason that passengers will be asked to do the same, right? I don't know if they're going to go back to this PCR shenanigan. Who knows?
Poor Kerry Mullis.
Oh, God.
Just one of many who was removed. Get out of the way. Step aside, Carrie, as in permanently. There you go.
I don't know. They're going to limit gatherings? I don't know. I mean, if I had to guess, they're probably going to go for broke on this time around. They will release something that...
Just when people are going back
to
the movie theaters, they're going to shut them down again.
Maybe. But no, if we listen to Bill Gates, what he said, you know, the second one will really get their attention. Well, okay. And you know people are going to resist this, the lockdowns and whatever comes along with it because of what we went through the first time.
Sure.
You know, it was way blown out of proportion. And I don't think they're going to go for it a second time. But then, depending on how bad this release is, you know, they might embrace it.
Well, you make a good point. We're going to have to wait and see. I don't think we'll have to wait too long. We're talking a couple of weeks in middle of September.
Yeah.
So 3 weeks, something like that. And then we'll know. I think the announcement will be made probably on September 1st around there. They have to give people a target date in the future, beginning such and such, you know the game.
I don't know what's going to be in this next injection. It's not even supposed to target this Eris. It's supposed to be one of the Omicron variants, which is come and gone.
Last one. That's right. XBB.
Yeah. So now, you're getting vaccinated, supposedly, for a virus that's no longer in circulation.
It's not the dominant variant out there. XBB is gone. And that's what's in the new bivalent. Among all, can you even imagine what they have perfected, tweaked, augmented, changed, reconfigured that they put into these new shots? And you know they have. Anybody with a brain knows they have if you studied the first one at all in any detail and listen to what we've been able to put together on it. We're not the only voice, but we have a pretty damn good handle on the basics. What they may have done in this one is anybody's guess, and I would submit it's probably not going to be for our betterment. It's going to be worse. I don't know what it's going to be. I couldn't even guess.
Well, whatever protein that people are programmed to manufacture as a result. This causes your body to produce a protein or proteins. We don't know what the effects of the protein's going to be. I mean, they could make something that could cause hemorrhagic fever or something that looks like hemorrhagic fever where people are bleeding from various orifices and, let's just call this Marburg. And people aren't going to know the difference.
They won't. I mentioned that last hour with Don. I said to stampede the majority of the herd, just come up with a variant that causes some kind of hemorrhagic result, maybe bleeding in the eyes, a little out of the ears, whatever. And all you got to do is put up half a dozen pictures of a little child, an adult with a blood pouring coming out of the corner of their eye, down their cheek, and the people will panic.
Yeah,
they'll panic.
They will, and that's what I say. They may embrace these lockdowns, and anybody that's opposed to them will be vilified.
Or worse. All right, here's a little bit on this new Eris thing. Then we got two videos for you, two or three. Eris, E-R-I-S, the most recent COVID variant, is supposedly causing spikes in cases all over the world. The story goes that England, Ireland, and the U.S. are all being hit hard. It's reached Australia, too. And yet another blow to the BRICS will save us crowd, B-R-I-C-S, BRICS, will save us crowd. India and China are playing right along. Scientists are even clamoring for the return of masks. Okay, well, we've never stopped. We've already been over everything you need to know about Eris here in this particular story. Long story short, COVID is just another made-up name for the flu. Not true. COVID is a synthetic virus, a coronavirus. And the variants are coats of paint they slap on the narrative to try to keep it looking fresh. I think this story is missing the point. These variants are possibly introduced. They're not naturally morphing from the original. That's easy to do. So, no, I don't think this is just the flu relabeled. I might have been the beginning.
No,
it
has
No.
It absolutely has a distinct presentation. This is not the flu. This is a coagulopathy. It can invade the nervous system. You'll know if you get it. This is not a flu.
Well, my friend told me his whole family was quite ill, quite ill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not fun. So there you go. All right. Meanwhile, the world of turbo cancer continues to grow and proliferate all over the place. And again, stories about people being discovered to have stage 4 cancer of whatever major organ. It takes no prisoners, this. Now, there's a doctor, Dr. Nathan Goodyear. Go ahead and set this up for us, and we'll play the little clip.
Yeah, we first heard of Nathan Goodyear back in February of this year. He did an interview with Paul Merrick with the FLCCC, and he has a clinic in Arizona, kind of a functional medicine naturopathic clinic where they treat cancer patients. And earlier this year, he did give an interview on the trend that he is noticing in his practice, with not just the injected coming down with cancer, but also people who have had the viral infection. In some cases, they were people, former patients, that had gone into remission. Their cancer was successfully treated, and they were enjoying life as normal. And then they acquired the infection, and sometime after that, their cancer came back. So this virus does have that cancer potential. Does it happen in everybody? No, I wouldn't say so, but there are those proteins in there that interfere with certain cancer suppressor genes, P53 being one of them, but other pathways as well that control for cancer that are dysregulated when you have this virus or its proteins. It also seems to interfere with the body's ability to control latent viruses that may have oncogenic capabilities, such as these herpes viruses, Epstein-Barr and Kaposi's sarcoma, human herpes virus 8. Those are both known to cause cancer if left unchecked. So there's a lot going into that. And we read last week the incidents where somebody had colon cancer, I think it was, and was dealing with it rather successfully. It seemed to have gone into remission. This person was not doing, I don't think, the traditional chemotherapy or radiation. They were treating it in natural ways, and it did seem to regress. And then they got what appears to be COVID. And some months later, this cancer came back with a vengeance, and the person eventually died from it. So it does a number on the immune system, at the very least, and you need a healthy immune system to control for cancer.
Yes. Okay. Let's go take a listen. Oh, my friend told me today that where his family is, herpes in the eye is now very common. Don't know if it's herpes simplex or zoster. I wouldn't want to get zoster in my eyeball or simplex. That can destroy your vision. Easy. I don't know, but that's a direct report from somebody that I know and respect. All right, here we go with Dr. Goodyear on turbo cancer. You're going to hear the voice of one of the interviewers just for a few moments, and then Dr. Goodyear's response.
Your experience so far?
I think one word describes it really well, but it's a word that I think has brought a lot of censorship. Turbo cancer.
Okay.
I think it's a word that really describes what we've seen. Because, you know, turbo is just, it's an adjective, right? It's just describing what you see. But it's a word that you can't say unless it's within the accepted narrative. Okay? Mm-hmm. And I'll highlight this in a slide this morning in just a little bit, how if it's within the accepted narrative, you can turbocharge away. But if you're talking about cancer and turbo cancer related to COVID, oh, no. You cannot say that. But that's a word that I would definitely reference as to what are we seeing. We are seeing cancer that has been in remission that blows up.
Mm-hmm.
We see cancer that has been controlled. It's not, you know, not in no evidence of disease, but it's in a very stable position. And sometimes that's the first step you want to get into if something's just completely out of control. Then you see it just go completely sideways. I very briefly present a couple case studies this morning, very briefly. One is a patient that was in no evidence of disease with stage 4 breast cancer. 2021, she's driving back from Connecticut for Christmas, and she gets COVID, and it goes absolutely sideways, responds to nothing, and gone in a matter of months. And a patient came into my office not too long ago, esophageal cancer. He got radiation. He had chemo for 2.5 years. And then he got injection one, injection two. It was stable. And then all of a sudden, spreads to lungs everywhere. When he came in my office, I asked him, I said, so I always like to hear their story. I said, tell me your story. This is what he said. He said, oh, the injection, of course, he called it vaccine. The injection is why I'm here. I said, well, really? How so? I'm curious. It caused my cancer to go from a stable situation to make it spread. Patients are not unaware. They're smarter than we give them credit for. And one of the things I learned as a gynecologist, which I think was training, if a woman says, you know, I think I really have a problem here. As a physician, I need to be very in tune to that. Because women are very intuitive. Most patients are very intuitive. If they're saying, look, I was fine and now I'm not, you know, George Orwell said, hey, we're commanded to ignore our eyes and ears. And that's what we're commanded to do right now. But patients are going, I don't care what the government's telling me to do. Mm-hmm. I was at least stable. I was in no evidence of disease. And now I'm not. What's the variable there? Infection, injection. What's the direct connection? I'm going to lay out some of the evidence that's starting to show up today, because it's not just speculative. There's clear evidence of what it's doing. And that's the concern, is what legacy is this going to leave? Because this is not just a one-time generational issue. This is a legacy issue. So this is going to be impacted for generations.
Well, in our bodies, we have tumor suppressors.
Right.
And we also have T3 and T4. What kind of changes have you seen or witnessed with tumor suppressors and our immune response in and around cancer, whether it happens to be infection or injection, as you put it?
Well, you look specifically as it relates to this. I'll give you some. It downregulates P53.
Oh, that's okay. My major tumor suppressor.
Yeah, spike protein. It downregulates P53. So that in and of itself shows the impact. That's a tumor suppressor gene. And so people go, oh, I thought, you know, turning off gene mutations is typically a good thing. Well, here it's a bad thing because it's turning off kind of a counter-regulatory mechanism. But some other things that it does is it really increases nuclear factor kappa B transcription, which is systemic inflammation, which a 2000 study clearly implicated it in numerous steps associated with cancer. Numerous. What's really interesting is when you couple lipopolysaccharide, which comes from the gut in most cases, gram-negative bacteria, metabolic endotoxemia, diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease, all of that is a comorbidity for COVID, then lipopolysaccharide with spike proteins, they form complexes together.
Whoa, okay.
And they increase nuclear factor kappa B transcription by 50%.
So we talk NF-kappa-beta, we talk the NRF2 anti-inflammatory pathway. That's stuff that we talk about. Obviously, in my world, LPS, leaky gut, that is a thing associated with dementia and everything else. Did not know it had an interaction with the spike protein.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. Well said. Literally and figuratively.
Okay, we'll stop it there. That's a good place to pause. You heard the keys there. All of a sudden, someone's found to have stage 4, and they're gone in a few months. It's too late to even begin to assemble a program of treatment in many cases. These people just die before they can even put something together. This is that bad. The P53 is being all but destroyed. It's being taken out of service. It's gone. And what's the other one, the BRCA? That one?
In this one, yeah, BRCA1.
Okay.
Yeah. So and those are two major DNA repair pathways, and then the P53 decides whether a cell lives or dies. And if it's cancerous, you want that thing gone. But if there's something interfering,
yes.
If there's something interfering with it, like the spike protein is known to do, then the cell does not get the signal to die, and it hangs around and might even divide and multiply and become a tumor.
I just don't even know what to think anymore. Anyone who's been injected, I can't stop there, though. We cannot do that. We have to say anyone who's been uninjected but has been around the injected as well. And we have to include them because of shedding, which was built into this whole operation in the beginning. They knew how they could pick up that 20% who were going to refuse the injection through shedding. They knew it. This thing is so evil. All right, so people are getting diagnosed. All of a sudden, they feel fine. Then they find out they have stage 4 cancer somewhere. Wow.
Yeah, it's really remarkable the speed at which it can happen.
That's what happened to David Dees. I have no question. That's, they gave him a turbo-type cancer. There was no, he had radiation treatments that did absolutely nothing. And I had power of attorney at the time, and the nurse told me that they'd never seen anything like it. He had 10 treatments on 2 tumors, and they only grew. They didn't shrink. Now, how can that be? Radiotherapy destroys tissue, but not in that case. So these turbo cancers, I think, may have been originally there, but I think they're morphed into something else. But then you add in the fact that the body's own defense mechanisms, BRCA1 and P53, are no longer available, and the cancer just goes berserk. It may be even more virulent and intense in its destruction already. I don't know. I don't know that. We don't know that. But that's another
thing. Well, a lot of times, you know, there's other cancer-causing viruses that work this way. The human papillomavirus, which is known to cause cervical cancer in women, you have these highly virulent strains, like I think it's number 11 and number 16, that because they bind so tightly to that P53, that is what makes them more prone to causing cancer than some of the other strains that bind only loosely to that P53. So depending on how tightly the spike, in this case, is binding to that P53, will probably have some bearing on whether or not a person goes on to develop cancer or if that cancer is treatable.
Well, you heard one thing
there's more
too.
Going on than that, though.
Yes, you heard one thing that you've said from day one, and that's you do not want inflammation in the body.
If you
get into an inflammatory state, that opens another door for cancer.
Right.
This whole thing is an oncogenic plandemic. Don't forget that.
Yeah. It is. You've
Among
got multiple parts of the immune system that are turned off or turned down. Then you've got these hypoxic conditions due to microclotting and low oxygen. I just said that, right? And then what you don't hear so much about is this vascular endothelial growth factor. Because of the low oxygen state, the body starts producing new blood vessels to compensate for the blood vessels that are blocked. And that's one thing that a cancer loves, is a blood supply. So when somebody has high levels of this vascular endothelial growth factor, that favors the proliferation of cancer.
Yes. Here's a note. I think we did read this before, so forgive the repetition because it's interesting. Very short note. I have been working 9/11 for over 30 years. I haven't seen this many working age people or younger found dead in their homes having cardiac and stroke events in my entire career or lifetime. A Twitter post. So
yeah,
paramedics,
that.
What's going on? Were you monitoring in the last couple days? Anything? What's the trend? Same old, just busy, busy, crazy busy?
Yeah, it wasn't as busy today, although I wasn't really monitoring it today that much. Mm-hmm. They are deferring more to other hospitals, so that tells me the local hospital is probably at capacity much of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Well, I hope we don't see a day where they start mailing out free of charge from your government body bags, three per household, and you have someone pass away at home, you bag them up and call for pickup. Don't laugh. It could happen.
Yeah, it's true.
So
I can hear in these paramedics' voices, though, that they're tired. They're just running all day.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to our shedding issue, which now in hindsight, we saw it early. It's even worse than we thought, and we did see it early, very early. But it's getting to be now a very great danger. Dr. Christina Parks, what do we have?
Yeah, she just did an interview with Maria Z, I think this past week. And she's a well-respected, very knowledgeable, I believe, microbiologist, speaking about the significance of, I think the opening topic was having to do with this alpha-gal syndrome, this meat allergy.
Yeah.
That seems to be becoming an issue. I think it's been an issue. It was primarily associated with tick bites because the tick would inject this. It's not a protein. It's a sugar, actually, that the body is responding to. And as a result of that tick bite and what was injected from the tick into the body, the person begins making antibodies against it, and that happens to be the same type of sugar that's present in primarily red meat, I believe. So the next time the person goes to eat a piece of meat, they'll have an allergic reaction and they will not want to eat meat anymore. I thought that that was primarily limited to Australia. We didn't hear too much about it in this country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But because of the way vaccines are made, not these present ones, not these mRNA injections, but the typical standard vaccine, a lot of times they're cultured in these solutions that require a growth medium, and they will very often use fetal bovine serum, which may contain some of this offending sugar, and induce that same type of allergy in a person that gets the vaccine. I haven't heard about that. I don't know really anybody in this country that's experience in that, not that there can't be, but but with these latest mRNA injections, you could be allergic to all kinds of things now as a result. A lot of times food allergies start because the gut is leaky. You start to have holes in the gut where proteins, especially if they're undigested and they're large, they can seep through into the bloodstream and then provoke the immune system. So over time, if that happens often enough, you can become allergic to those foods. So a lot of times people will go to great lengths to eliminate those foods that are causing the problem. But until you heal the gut so that it's not full of holes, you're going to keep reacting to foods of all kinds.
Right.
And then your world becomes very small because there's very little you can eat without provoking the immune system.
Oatmeal three times a day.
Well, believe it or not, people react to oatmeal. You know, when you get to that point, and I've known people that have gotten to that point, your life is miserable. I mean, you literally cannot eat anything without having some severe reaction to it.
No. If there was ever a society that had a happy relationship with lots of eating, it's this one. That would be...
Yeah. I mean, people eat for recreation.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
The sport.
Here's Dr. Christina. It is. It's also a tranquilizer. You eat it, get full stomach, and kind of get a little dozy. Dr. Christina Parks, an affiliate physician at America's Frontline Doctors, specializing in molecular biology. Here's a little section of her conversation.
And so if this was in your cells, it could respond to hormones. If it's in your gut bacteria, maybe it responds to something that you eat. So if you start turning on the spike protein in response to something you eat, you're going to have a hyperinflammatory complex that's going to make you ill all the time. But what if they have, let's say that this is getting into your cells the way it's supposed to, right? It's going into your actual physical cells, not just in your gut. And let's say that they have a regulatory element. And let's say when it's turned on, it makes a protein that inactivates. You have proteins that suppress cancer in your body. Okay. Some very important one is P53 or retinoblastoma. These are really, really critical proteins that control whether a cell becomes cancerous. When they're mutated, those are key proteins when they're mutated that you get cancer. Okay. And usually they're only mutated in a few cells and hopefully you're able to get the cancer out. But if they turned on a regulatory element and made this gene that binds these these tumor suppressors, whoever those were turned on in would get cancer.
You heard Erica talk about how tightly bound the P53 ends up, just for one example. That's what she's talking about right here.
And so when you got cancer, would you know that they were controlling you and they decided maybe they gave it to a certain subset of people or a demographic or a regional, or maybe they gave it to everybody, who knows? But it could be used to theoretically give a bunch of people cancer, kill them, or create different things, different illnesses or whatever in people. And you could design them so that in this sub, like these people get cancer, these people get heart disease. So you're playing, you're actually turning the body into a manufacturing process, plant for whatever they want it to produce. Now, secondarily, I'm talking about perhaps producing a protein that the body might normally make, but they could make designer proteins. And we would think of these in terms of nanobots. It's really technically the same. They could design a sequence genetically, put it together, test it in cells in a lab, and then take that sequence, which is kind of what they did for the COVID vaccine, right, with the spike protein or whatever. They can take that sequence and then put it into your body, and your body's going to make whatever they tell it to. It's going to make these little designer proteins called enzymes that do whatever they want it to.
Do those designer
proteins... And so the question is...
Can I ask you, when you talk about what we know as nanobots, is this programmable, nanomaterials that are administered through medicines that are instructed either beforehand or in real time to go and do certain things within the body?
Okay, so I just want to clear up some misconceptions. You're thinking of nanobots in terms of some sort of metal or silicone or something like that. These are proteins. The body makes proteins. That's what it does. But our proteins, everything that happens in your body is a little protein that does something. These little enzymes that do all of your metabolic reactions. And so you can, insert the genetic sequence for one that already exists, or you can design your own and test its function. Like maybe it cleaves something. So these are going to have like one or two basic functions, but you could design one that did a certain thing. So again, or you could design one that actually binds to and regulates your DNA, turns certain genes, turns a tumor suppressor off so that you're going to get cancer, turns, a cancer gene on, something that dysregulates your immune system. So they could control your genes with these little proteins, or they could create it to have a specific function. And, or like in the video, one that created a problem where you felt sick every time you ate meat because it inhibited an enzyme that you use to digest your meat. Yeah. Or they could make a hormone that dysregulates your hormonal axis. So whatever it is they want to do, they just have to sort of think deeply about what kind of protein would affect that process, and then design one, have your body make it, your body releases it all into your bloodstream, and then it's in you doing whatever it is they've designed it to do. But this is not a metal or a silicone, it's a protein. And I say a nanobot because enzymes, proteins, they do things in the body.
I understand and I appreciate your clarification. So we're talking about giving the body instructions to do certain things. Essentially, you know, is this, when we're talking about that, are we talking about sort of CRISPR type of instructions as well? You're talking about manipulating the DNA or changing the DNA or splicing it, which, you know, is the simplified version, I guess, of CRISPR, splicing, inserting, modifying, changing. What is the limitation to these instructions, Dr. Parks? I mean, is the human being at risk forever now?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, I believe there's some grace of God that, so when your cells are infected or have this, and that's part of the problem with these vaccines is those cells that are making the spike protein, the immune system's attacking them. They're like, this is not supposed to be here. It's not supposed to be doing that. But then if you have cells, you needed those cells that were in your heart or in your brain or whatever that are now being destroyed by your immune system because they're making this aberrant protein. So it's possible and very likely that the body will be able to clear some of this. And again, both the mRNA is transcribed into DNA. All of this technology is getting into your DNA. It's just a blatant lie that it isn't. The only question is how much and to what effect.
That's the question. So you get the idea. These little proteins can be designed to do almost any amount of damage to any particular system in your physiology. It's really crazy. They're into the world of total control of living organisms now. Virtually total control. As far as they're concerned, they probably think they have it. You talk about being able to kill people en masse, I guess that's total control. So there's Dr. Parks. Anything you want to
add
to that?
Okay, you're producing a foreign protein, a synthetic protein, a designer protein. Whatever the case is, it's not your proteins, and whatever cells are producing it are doing so at the expense of the proteins they should be producing. So it's disastrous that way as well. You know, when proteostasis, which is the regulation of your proteins, becomes deranged and dysregulated, you're going to fall apart. It's just a matter of time. I guess you could say that that's a hallmark of aging. But now they've accelerated that whole process because everything in the body is synchronized. And the fact that people have now been transfected with this garbage, really, that does nothing other than disrupt all of the bodily processes, it's a death sentence. I hate to say it, but it's a death sentence. You don't know which cells.
Back from that. No. It's total chaos is what's being sown into the body. Chaos.
It is. You know, for a finely tuned machine, I mean, that's one of the perks of being young is that you have just absolutely exquisite synchronicity and timing with everything that happens. It's so well regulated. But with time and age, these processes, you know, some deteriorate faster than others. Some organs age faster than others. And you get this entropy, for lack of a better word, to the point where the whole organism just eventually unravels and then there's death.
Got it. All right. We have another short clip here. Now, this is an acupuncturist named Ananda. Now, as I recall, she's not vaxxed, and yet she's working around people who are. And that's the long and the short of the intro on it. Anything you want to add? We've got to get into this real quick here.
Yeah. So this is just another case of a woman experiencing this dysfunctional uterine bleeding as a result of having close contact with the vaxxed. And again, just keep in mind that this dysfunctional uterine bleeding has been linked to mast cell activation syndrome. Go ahead and play it. We can comment on it after.
We've laid out the mast cell activation story 2-3 programs ago. You'll see it in the title. And please do look at that video and share that video as well. No one's talking about mast cells. And that's a big player in this whole tragic game. All right, here we go. This is Ananda on the beef stew program.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Stu, for having me.
So you're convinced that the medical problems that you're having right now are a direct result of this transmission or shedding, as we call it, in relation to these shots that we refer to as bioweapons, because really they are.
Yes, without a doubt.
What makes you think that?
Well, initially when I first started looking into it, and found the Pfizer clinical trial document, pages 67 through 69, it clearly states in there that transmission occurs through inhalation and skin contact. And the first 5 months of my patients getting vaccinated, I was not aware of this shedding, which is really transmission anomaly. And what happened was, the more I researched into it, the more I realized this was exactly what was happening to me. And it got to the point where I would even have a freshly vaccinated person on my table and while treating them, start dropping massive clots.
Right away?
Yes, while treating them.
Okay, so you shut down your practice and now you're keeping away from, as much as you can, people who have been inoculated. Has that helped? Have you recovered from these shedding effects, or do you think that they're permanent?
I don't think anything's permanent, because God, you know, can work wonders in healing. However, it is disheartening that I'm now 1 year later. It did take me, after I finally closed my clinic from having so many experiences with irregular menstrual cycles and everything, and then closed my clinic, it took me 4 months to stop bleeding. So I bled and for 120 days, and it's literally a miracle that I am still alive.
If you're going through this, there has to be thousands of other women or men dealing with the effects of this transmission or shedding. Do you think
exactly.
that they just don't realize it? Do you think that they're in denial about it? Or do you think that they're, I mean, what do you think is happening here? Why aren't more people coming forward and saying, hey, I'm experiencing this?
A lot of women do come forward, but unfortunately it's on the back channels because everything gets censored. And there's another huge problem that I see in this kind of spiritual community on YouTube and things like that. And everything that they're talking about with what they call these ascension symptoms are literally shedding symptoms, and it's a huge disservice. And as for everyone else, people, you know, all the time downplay women's cycles, and we know from the research that it targets women, number one, ovaries, uterus, reproductive system. So men aren't going to notice the effects as much. And I do want to say that whether people notice these effects or not, it is happening. It is happening. We know the research from the self-disseminating vaccinations. We know this is, you know, very planned in the patents. It is happening whether you believe in it or not, or whether you realize it or not. Everybody needs to pay more attention to any strange health symptoms, including nosebleeds, extreme fatigue, rashes. It manifests differently for everyone, and there is no uniform vaccine out there. So you don't know what you're around. You don't know what you're getting. And that will affect your symptoms as well.
So do you think that you mentioned that there's a different way that it manifests in everybody. And we've discussed, we've seen studies on these self-transmissible vaccines going all the way back to 2008. So I speculate that it's probably even before that. But there are articles where they're talking about it. They were excited about it in science magazines and everything else. This is great. We can develop herd immunity. People that are vaccine hesitant will automatically have this vaccine. We don't know if it's the spike protein that's being transmitted or what it is, but people could have different things. Now, the infertility thing, the targeting of the reproductive system in females, we think that we have a theory as to why that is. We think it's very intentional, but for the sake of time, and our audience knows what that is too, depopulation, to put it quite simply.
Right.
But if people are developing like weird rashes and they're presenting at the doctor with something that might look like, you know, an allergic reaction or a wart of some kind, or if they have a chronic cough or if they have chronic fatigue, they're constantly sleeping, they need to go to take a nap when they don't normally do that. They have a hangover type headache, which I have personally experienced being around vaccinated people. What are doctors saying? How are they reacting to this when patients, you know, present with these symptoms?
Well, my own doctor that I tried to inform, who's a functional medicine and medical doctor who is very into health, he flat out just said, I don't agree with you, and never wanted to discuss it again. You know.
Okay, we're going to stop there. We're running short on time, but you get the idea. Doctors are not the people to go to in many cases. You really have to begin to do your own research. You go in and you trust a doctor who is either in a predisposed sort of configuration against the idea that shedding is real because he or she doesn't want to face the fact that they're, if they're not injected, they're dealing with this all day long face-to-face, or other reasons. So, yeah, her doctor didn't want anything to do with it, basically said, you know, you're nuts, leave me alone. It's not a good situation out there. Where do people go? Unfortunately, many of them don't have anywhere to go, and they end up at the ER. And that's a big problem, because what do they know in there? They're primarily treating heart attacks and strokes now. You go in there with some symptomology like a rash or whatever, and not only will it take you maybe 10 to 20 hours to get seen in some cases, but I don't know who's going to see you and what they're going to know. The burden is on the individual now to heal yourself, certainly be your own doctor in terms of basic knowledge of the possibilities of what you have. Go ahead.
That's disappointing to hear that she actually did go to a functional medical doctor, which you would think would be familiar with this mast cell activation syndrome.
Define functional medical doctor for us. That's a new word. A lot of people don't know it. Functional medicine. What is functional medicine?
Well, it's somewhere in between, I would say, a naturopath and a standard allopathic medical doctor. These people are supposed to have a broader understanding of the human physiology and how all of the body systems are interrelated. You know, no one system works in a vacuum, and to be looking at the person as a whole. I mean, this mast cell activation syndrome has been known for at least 10 years, and it's becoming more and more common. It was common before the pandemic, and it's really common now. Several papers have been written about this mast cell activation syndrome being a part of long COVID. And it's basically when the immune system becomes so irritated, inflamed, activated, to the point where you become hypersensitive to all kinds of stimuli in the environment. And it doesn't calm down. So the body's in a state of hyperinflammation. And when that happens, it can release any number of different, what we call mediators. These are chemicals that are released by the cells to induce a certain reaction in either that the cell that's releasing it or a distant cell. But with this, in the case of women and this bleeding, that's the immune system reacting to the presence of the spike, presumably, that has accumulated in the endometrium, the lining of the uterus, and reacting to it. And probably what's being released, the most common mediators would be heparin and this prostaglandin, PGD2. The PGD2 is known to cause cramping, and which is probably what's happening with these women that are expelling these, in some cases, these deciduous casts. And there's an interesting paper that was written. Dr. Lawrence Afrin is one of the luminaries in this field, published a paper in 2014 about a 71-year-old woman who presented with postmenopausal bleeding. She was not on any type of hormone therapy. And she was worked up for, well, probable cancer, obviously, and was determined to have a type of papillary serous cancer, which is not a good prognosis. So she was started on chemotherapy. The chemotherapy did nothing. The cancer actually progressed. The chemotherapy was stopped after, I think, 6 cycles. And they tried some synthetic progestins to try to counter the estrogen, believing it might be driven by hormones. That did nothing. What finally did the trick was a combination of histamine blockers, H1, H2. One was Zyrtec, which is an H1 histamine blocker, and then Pepcid, which is H2, and then aspirin, and it resolved. So it was a mast cell-driven cancer. And I don't know how many women are getting worked up or evaluated for that possibility, that are having these bleeding issues. But it's sad to see many of them resorting to a hysterectomy to try to solve it.
Yeah. Happening all the time now. People are just not informed. The medical community is letting the masses down. They're not doing their homework. They haven't figured it out. And it's there to be figured out. We figured it out. Erica did. So it's right there.
Well, it's there in the literature. If people want to look, you know, inquiring minds want to know, the answers are out there.
Indeed. All right. That's our program tonight on this Monday. Thanks for being here. I hope you picked up a few things that are helpful. Listen to the program again. It'll stick more. Pass it around. And anything you want to add real quick?
No, that should do it.
Okay. Very good. All right. Thank you all. And thank you, young lady. We'll be back Wednesday.
Okay. My pleasure, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
Back with more. Going to Hawaii next to talk to Dick Allgaier about the Maui catastrophe.